Les colloques du Collège de France.
Je voudrais vous présenter maintenant Arev Pellin-Sumar, qui est une jeune paléogénéticienne qui est l'auteur d'un des articles que j'ai montré ce matin. Et vous avez compris que les données de la paléogénétique sont vraiment centrales pour comprendre cette transition qui n'a pas eu lieu entre le paléolithique moyen et le paléolithique supérieur. Et elle va nous parler donc de ces interactions possibles entre Néandertal et Sapiens. Merci.
Thank you. Thank you for joining today, and thank you for the organizers for this great event. I'm Arev, and as was introduced, I come from the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology in Leipzig. I work for two genetics department with a great focus on the interactions between archaic humans and modern humans. And today, this will be the title of my talk, and I will try to give you an overview of the field and the next steps. My presentation will be in English. Unfortunately, my French is not great, but I made the slides in French, so I hope it will be clear. As geneticists, we use the name modern human for Homo sapiens, so this will be a jargon that will be used in this talk. The interactions between Neanderthals and modern humans was debated for many years since the discovery of Neanderthals, almost 200 years ago now, and it was discuss in the past if Neanderthals were ancestral to modern humans or if modern humans and Neanderthals made babies together. And as geneticists, we like a lot to investigate this baby-making events, and we call it admixture to sound more fancy. So it's another term that I will be using throughout this talk. The first sequencing of the Neanderthal genome in 2010 showed that some of these questions that were asked for decades can be answered using genetics. And today we know, as a result of this paper, we know that in fact Neanderthals were not ancestral to modern humans, but instead a sister lineage. And we know also using the Neanderthal genome that today all the populations outside of Africa carry around 2% DNA that is coming from Neanderthals. This showed that some of the questions that are important for human history can be answered using genetics, but since that time, there were many other questions that remained in the shadows, such as what we can tell about the population history of Neanderthals themselves and the nature of the admixture between Neanderthals and modern humans. So before I go into our results, I will give a little bit of a background of our research process. So most of our research as geneticists actually start in the field. We work very closely together with archaeologists and anthropologists, and when we are at an excavation, if human remains are found, after through discussions with archaeologists and getting the permits, we take the human remains to our labs and we study them genetically. This is done in very sterile lab conditions. So as you can see, we're wearing this kind of protective gear before we do any sampling of the human remains. This is not to protect ourselves, but this is to protect the specimens from us, because we don't want to put our DNA in the specimens and get our DNA basically when we sequence them. What we obtain from the skeletal remains is about 10 to 15 milligrams of powder. This is very little. As you can see, there are tiny holes we are making in the specimens to be able to get a little bit of powder. And we use chemicals to extract the DNA out of the powder and then make them ready for the sequencer, where we get the DNA sequences. And most of our time actually is then spent on analyzing this data and producing results in comparison with the other published DNA that we get from present-day humans or ancient humans. This is the most common way of studying ancient DNA, but it's not the only one. Today we know that there are alternative sources of DNA, such as sediments and ornaments that are worn by ancient humans even more than 20,000 years ago. And these methods are non-destructive, so they could be alternatives to making little holes into specimens that we want to study genetically. However, realistically, DNA is not preserved very well in specimens, and much less so in the soil, and this preservation gets even less and less as we go back in time. So to take you a little bit to the properties of ancient DNA, I prepared like a presentation that shows. So this is, imagine that this is the DNA that you have in the individual right after they die. It's fragmented, but with time, most of it gets lost, and also the existing DNA fragments gets shorter and shorter. Furthermore, with time, some chemical alterations happen to ancient DNA, such as chemical modifications, especially on the terminal positions. More so, when we get the DNA from a specimen, we find in the mix some DNA that is coming from microbes that were in the soil, and this is also what we sequence then. And on top of that, we also get DNA that is belonging to present-day humans introduced to the mix as a result of handling after the excavations or in the lab. So as you can see, it's a mixture of a lot of different things together, and it's difficult to only get the DNA that we are interested in, which is shown here in yellow. And our team at the Max Planck Institute, as well as a lot of other researchers, since 20 years has been working on developing methods, both in the lab and also computationally, to get better quality and cleaner ancient DNA from any kind of specimen that we're working on. And as a result of this effort, today we have about 20,000 ancient human genomes from all over the world, spanning through different times. This is very impressive, of course, but as I just mentioned, with the time, DNA is degrading more and more. So it's very difficult to get very old DNA. So when we look at only the human genomes that are older than 30,000 years, this number goes down to about 40 genomes for modern humans and 35 genomes for Neanderthals. This seems comparably small when you compare it to 20,000. Of course, this is very little. However, even with this amount of data, we can tell a complex genetic history of archaic humans and modern humans. So this is the current consensus on the demography right now, and of course it is very complex, as most things are with humans. And although today's talk is mostly focusing on modern human and Neanderthal interactions, I also want to briefly talk about Denisovans, which you already heard earlier today. Denisovans are first described genetically using a pinky bone from the Denisova cave in the Altai Mountains, and they are a sister lineage to the Neanderthals. And we know today, using genetics, we know that they split from the lineage that leads to the Neanderthals about 750,000 years ago. So I will try to use the pointer up. This would be the split of the Denisovans and Neanderthals from each other. And the lineage that leads to them is splitting from us, 750,000 years ago, and from each other about 580,000 years ago. So Denisovans are more enigmatic compared to Neanderthals. We know much less about them. They were not even morphologically very well defined until last year. Now we know Harbin's skull is also representative of Denisovans, as well as probably a lot of other Middle Paleolithic specimens from China. What we know about the Neanderthals is a bit more. So using high coverage genomes from various Neanderthals, so today we have four of those, we know that their populations can be genetically grouped into two main clusters. One of them is the ones in the Altai Mountains that lived around 100 to 120,000 years ago. And we know that they were a small isolated group and had some Denisovan ancestry also. The second group, the larger one, which we have more genomes from, is represented by Vindhya Neanderthal from the Chagriskaya cave. And they are mostly found in the Western Europe and Western Eurasia. And this is also the Neanderthal group that gave rise to the DNA that we can trace today in the genomes of present-day non-Africans. And I will be mostly focusing on this event today and talk about a little bit about the research that we've been doing on those. What we know about out of Africa event, we know that modern humans evolved in Africa about 300,000 years ago, and a group of modern humans then left Africa sometime between 100 or 60,000 years. Although this date is not very well known exactly when this happened, the current consensus is about that time. And then this group that left Africa occupied rest of the world. And this event is what we call the Out of Africa event. Of course, there were earlier migrations from Africa to the other parts of the world, earlier smaller waves most likely, but we do not find any evidence genetically for this kind of event. Fossil evidence that is increasingly suggesting that there were earlier migration events, but these were not the ones that led to the populations that we see today occupying all the territories outside of Africa. So when we talk about out of Africa, we specifically talk about this big migration event that happened around this time. And when this happened, we already see Neanderthals were occupying parts of Western Asia for thousands of years, and similarly Denisovans were found in the East. And using the DNA coming from Neanderthals that is present in the present-day human genomes, this admixture event between modern humans that left Africa and Neanderthals was dated to between 37,000 and 86,000 years before present. However, as you can see, this is a very large time interval, so it's not very precise. And the reason why this is not precise is because present-day human genomes were used, and this introduces some noise. I will explain a little bit better later this, but as we get closer to the timing of the admixture, if we use genomes from this time, then we can date it more precisely. And this is exactly what we did in a study that I had the opportunity to lead in the last few years. And you already heard a lot about this, but this focuses on human remains from Rhenis in Germany and Slatikun in Czechia. And before our study, there were only a few, so seven to be precise, human genomes that are older than 40,000 years. And the only high quality one among them was the one in Üsttişim. So from Europe, we didn't have any high quality genomes that are very important to study the precise timing of this admixture. So in this study, we were lucky to obtain 13 human specimens from Rhenis cave in Germany that dated between 49,000 to 42,000 years before present. And when we generated DNA from these specimens, we found that they came from six individuals in total. And we were able to get good quality genomes from them, and especially from one of them, Rhenis 13, the DNA preservation was so well, we were able to get a high quality genome. And on top of that, we also increased the quality of the genome from the Slatikun individual from Czechia that was previously introduced, which made, through our efforts, we were able to triple the number of high-quality genomes that are older than 40,000 years, and this allowed us to look into the population history of this group much more in detail, but also investigate the admixture between modern humans and Neanderthals much more in detail. So when we first look into the genetic relationship between the group in Rhenis and all the other modern humans that lived before 40,000 years ago, we found that Rhenis individuals are clustering together and separate from the others, such as the ones from Bacio-Kiro, Tianyuan, or Üsttişim and Oase. So they were grouping together. So this is a statistics called outgroup F3. And if the colors are brighter, so closer to yellow, it means that they are more similar to each other. So you can see that they're grouping together. And Slatikun from Czechia, as you already heard, is also belonging to this group. So we see that Slatikun was also grouping together with the individuals in Rhenis. This means that they represent the same group of people that split from the main out of Africa population at the same time. And so when we look more in detail in the relationships within the group, what we found was that there were close relatives, so there was genetic kinship within the individuals in Rhenis. We find a mother-daughter pair between an individual we call Rhenis 4 and an individual we call Rhenis 6, and we also found this mother-daughter pair had second to third degree relationship with another female in the group. To our surprise, when we compare Slatikun in this analysis with the Rhenis individuals, we find that Slatikun was also in this extended family. So Slatikun was also genetically related to a fifth or sixth degree to these three individuals that are in Rhenis. This showed that Slatikun was probably also a maker of LRJ, and not only she belonged to this group, but was also, was introduced, was probably a distant cousin of the individuals that we find in Rhenis. So when this group existed in Central Europe, in Germany and Czechia, there were also Neanderthals around. So this dates to, as I mentioned, between 42 to 49,000 years ago. And we know that there are Neanderthals there in Belgium, in Germany. So in the north, where this group is occupying and migrating, we do have Neanderthal groups there. And we wanted to see how the Neanderthal ancestry in the genomes of these individuals are. For this, I want to talk a little bit about what happens to the Neanderthal DNA once it gets into the human gene pool. So imagine you have a Neanderthal parent and a modern human parent. The child will have one set of chromosomes from each parent. So you will have one Neanderthal chromosome copy and one modern human copy. And if this child then grows up and has her own kids with modern humans, then in the next generation, what you will see is something like this. Because of a process we call recombination during cell division, the DNA in chromosomes is getting cut off and shuffled. So the DNA from the grandparents gets in each generation smaller and smaller. And if you think about many, many generations after, what we have is a lot of small fragments. So more in number, but much shorter. And using the distribution of these fragments that we identify, we can understand first how many Neanderthal ancestries in there. So how many admixture events happened in the past of this individual that we study. Second, we can understand how many generations ago this happened. So this is how we date when the admixture event happened using genetic information. So after many, many generations, if you think of today, people living today, this is what you will find. So these are each chromosome of a person living today outside of Africa, and the red lines here are the Neanderthal ancestry. And yeah, they are very small, but you can see that they exist. When we did the same type of analysis now for Slatikun and Ranis individuals, this is what we find. Now they're in blue, the Neanderthal ancestry, so they're in much bigger fragments. This is because they live closer to the event of admixture with Neanderthal. So there was not enough generations passed to break those into smaller fragments that we see today in present-day humans. So what we find here using the segment lengths and distribution of these Neanderthal fragments, we see that they actually come from a single admixture event. So they date back to about 66 to 98 generations before Ranis 13 lived, let's say about 80 generations before Ranis 13 lived. We also compare this Neanderthal ancestry to the other ancient humans and present-day humans, and but we find that they correlate well, which means the Neanderthal ancestry we find in this individual is the same one that we find in the people living today. Using the generation time we calculated using the method just I explained to you and the radiocarbon dates directly taken on the specimen of Ranis 13, we are able to then precisely date when this admixture happened. And what we find as a result of this is between 49,500 and 45,300 years before present. And this agrees with the previous estimates that I showed you in the earlier slides. However, it is much more precise and a little bit on the younger edge of what was previously calculated. So this is what we learned for the main admixture event with Neanderthals that is shared between all the non-Africans living today and in the past. But this is not the only story. So when we look at the other groups that lived before 40,000 years ago, such as ones from Bachokiro and Oase, we find in their genomes that were additional admixture events. So these individuals, they also carry what we find in Ranis and Slatikun, the shared admixture event. However, they have on top of that more recent admixtures with Neanderthals. And I want to show you a similar plot for Oase. I think you already saw this today, but you can see that there are very long fragments on chromosome 5 and 12, but there are also many smaller others. And when we do this kind of distribution plot that I just showed you, this results in two admixture events. So you can separate them from each other. You can separate the admixture that led to the smaller ones from the one that led to the larger fragments. Using this, we know that there were two admixtures into Oase from Neanderthals, and one of them, the one that caused the very long fragments, was actually four generations before this individual lived. So the grandparent was a Neanderthal. And Oase is younger than the individuals we find in Ranis. So this really tells that these populations, shortly after they split from one another, had very different fates when they were dispersing into Eurasia. So the emerging picture now is that after the out of Africa groups split from each other, we don't know exactly where, and the main admixture event that we now date to 47,000 years approximately happened when they were still together. So before they were splitting, they had this Neanderthal admixture with Neanderthals. That's why they all carry the same ancestry of Neanderthals. However, I want to also stress here again, although we date it to this time, it doesn't mean that it was one generational event. So what we mean by admixture is groups of people in admixing for many generations. So actually when we dated how long this might have taken, we found it to be around 7,000 years. So imagine for 7,000 years, two populations are producing offspring together, so admixing. And this is what gives result as a result to 2% Neanderthal DNA that we have today. After they split from one another, we find other admixture events. So for example, for Bachaquiro and Oase, we find additional admixture events, but for Ranis and Slatikun and some other modern human populations that we don't yet sampled, we see different migration patterns and different admixture patterns with Neanderthals and other archaic humans. So we know now, as a result of studying all these modern human genomes that are older than 40,000 years, that Slatikun and Ranis was the first to split, and they don't carry additional Neanderthal ancestry. And we also don't find any ancestry from those populations to the people living later. So it seems like these individuals really migrated to north and then they died out there. So we don't find any genetic contribution from those. However, from Bachaquiro and Oase, we do find second admixture with Neanderthals, but also we find a little bit of genetic trace in the present-day East Asians and Native Americans, DNA tracking back to Bachaquiro. So it also shows that these groups had different fates after they split from one another. As I mentioned, we know a lot now about the modern humans, but what do we actually know about the Neanderthals that admixed with modern humans? We have today about 35 Neanderthal genomes that are spanning from 430,000 until 40,000 years ago when they got extinct. Only four of those are high quality genomes. But when we look at the time zone that is between 40 and 50,000 years ago, so the time that Neanderthals and modern humans were occupying the same territories and admixing with each other, this number goes to 12. So we only have 12 Neanderthal genomes from this time that is informative of admixture. And only one of those is high quality. So this is limiting our understanding of the Neanderthal populations of this time. And I want to confidentially tell you about a study that we've been undertaking that is led by Alba Bosun-Mesa. This paper is accepted and is about to come out in a couple of weeks, hopefully, but it's under press embargo. So I ask you not to post anything about it on media. And if you're part of the press, please reach out to these people that are listed on the slides. And as a part of this study, we increased the number of Neanderthal genomes that are dating between 40 and 50,000 years ago to understand their populations better, but also to understand the Neanderthal modern human admixture better. And we generated, as a part of this study, many late Neanderthal genomes from France and also from Belgium. So this resulted in one new high-quality genome from the Goyer site in Belgium, and that dated to about 42,000 years ago. So this is younger than the Vindhya Neanderthal that is in Croatia. We also generated 11 new nuclear genomes from late Neanderthals and 14 mitochondrial genomes from the same individuals. As a result of this study, we have a few new results, so I will go through them quickly. We first find that the Neanderthal ancestry we find in the genomes of people living today is not closer to the younger Neanderthal from Goye, but is closer to the Vindhya Neanderthal that is slightly older and from Croatia. So we also found one of the Neanderthals from Belgium, Kuan, had a mitochondrial DNA that was very diverged. So this Neanderthal is supposed to be a late Neanderthal by radiocarbon dating, so around 45,000 years ago, but the mitochondrial DNA seems to be more ancient. And similar pattern was observed for a Neanderthal in Madran, it's called Torin, maybe you heard about this. So it was also a similar pattern to this. Lastly, you will hear more about this, but from RC, we have a nuclear genome that is also from a late Neanderthal. However, we find something very interesting in this genome. We find that even though it has similarities to the other late Neanderthals that are contemporaneous and in France, we see some deeper ancestry in this Neanderthal, which might suggest that maybe there was another group that deeply diverged, still existed at the time, and gave ancestry to RC. But this needs to be investigated more with better data. Most importantly for this talk, I think what is a big question still in the field is that we find DNA from Neanderthals in all the modern humans that are older than 40,000 years, but we don't ever find the other way around. So all the late Neanderthal genomes we investigate until today, we never find modern human DNA in those. So it looks like this mixing with Neanderthals happened somewhere else, not in Europe, because we don't find modern human DNA in the European late Neanderthal genomes. But this is an open question and still needs to be addressed with more late Neanderthal genomes. And lastly, our results are indicating that even though Neanderthals were stably very low in population size for thousands and thousands of years, what we find is this stability. So we don't find a drastic drop in the population size towards the end of their time, because these Neanderthals are some of the latest ones, like shortly before their shortly before they got extinct. But when we look at their genomes, we don't find any evidence for this sharp decline, and this is going against the hypothesized methods or ways of Neanderthal extinction. So this is also something that is still needs to be considered with genetics and other methods to study. So I wanted to today give you an overview of what we know still. So we learned a lot since 2010, since the time we first had a Neanderthal genome sequenced. However, there are still many, many open questions. We know very little about the population, for example, that left Africa. We don't know anything. We don't have any human genome that dates back to the admixture with Neanderthal. So we don't really know when the out of Africa happened. We don't know where it happened. We don't know where the admixture with Neanderthals happened. So there are still many questions to answer, and hopefully our field is growing quite fast, and with our collaborations with archaeologists, with methods that are supported and questions that are brought through these collaborations, we will be able to understand the population history of modern humans and Neanderthals better in the future. And with that, I would like to thank again the organizers and thank you for listening.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.